Welcome to the Mindful Surfer podcast with myself, Will Foster, and my co-host, Liam Morgan. Liam, what is the news?
The news is we still haven't beaten our 6.42 personal best at Biff Bat, or to give it its official title, Fresca Ball. It's becoming a real Mindful Surfer out of the water staple. Might have seen the little clip that we posted of us having a knockabout on the beach. There are no waves because we've had quite a significant summer flat spell and it's ongoing.
Yep.
I'm going to do a little bit of traveling the weekend to find a wave. We'll come back to that later in the show. But yeah, that's the news really. And we've even discovered new ways of making this Biff Bat game more engaging and actually working a workout into there as well.
Yeah.
So we're taking that frivolity and turning it into something, but God, it's fun.
We have a dream of having the likes of WSL take this on, this Biff Bat game, and have adjudicators and umpires, you know, what's their official score?
Yeah.
You know, you can see the likes of Kelly Slater, who's as competitive as he is.
Yeah.
Wanting to post up into the thousands. I did get 1,000 once. Now Biff Bat, just for listeners who you don't necessarily understand what we're talking about here, is just all it is beach ball, and you probably all had a little go at some point, and it's just two wooden bats. There you go, you're off, and a little ball.
Like a squash ball.
Like a squash ball.
Yeah.
You've got to keep it in the air.
Yeah.
I remember playing with my dad in Turkey when I was 14 and we got to 1,000. Now my dad was a serious sportsman, and there he was in his budgie smugglers and his shades on.
Aviators.
His aviators, exactly what he was wearing. That was thinking of the word. And he had a gin and tonic.
Yeah.
And a fag in his left hand.
Yeah.
And the bat in his right hand.
Yeah.
And he could just pull shots out of everywhere. And we're still chain smoking.
Well, that's how
tucking into the next fag while we're still playing.
That's how sport was.
There you go. And the thing about keeping it in the air, the ball.
Like you just don't care.
Like you just don't care. Is that you're turning it into an infinite versus finite game. Now, in a way, that's what makes us so drawn to surfing. Surfing doesn't have rules. It doesn't say how long the surf should be. It doesn't say what you should ride. There's no rules. So it's infinite. That you just explore and you create and you're an artist and you just fucking do this and a bit of that. And you know, now fair enough, we all get into our habits and patterns as surfers, but ultimately the sky is the limit. Where do you want to surf? What do you want to do? How do you want to ride the wave? Like, do you want to draw a high line, low line? Do you want to do cutbacks or just fucking just go straight? I mean, the thing about sports though, that's very different to surfing is normally they're finite. There's rules.
Yeah,
it's locked down by, right, you know, you're bowling this many balls or, you know, you're serving into that box or you got to hit the ball into that hole or whatever.
Totally. And it's about accessibility as well, isn't it? Some stuff is, this thing is so accessible.
Yeah.
And it's also where you are working alongside the person you're playing. You're not playing against them. You're playing with them to keep the flow going.
This is the biggest difference. It's a team sport. It's properly about keeping it just in the air.
Yeah.
And there's no kind of parameter for that. Yeah. There's no, I mean, to be fair, my friend who called it Biff Bat, not Friskable, my friend Ollie who calls it Biff Bat, I don't know where that comes from, argues that, you know, you need to be 10 Biffs. Because one person, the reason why he calls it Biff Bat is one person has the Biff and the other person has the bat.
Right, well.
So I don't know where that comes from. But you've got to be 10 bats apart from each other, approximately.
Yeah.
And that might be the only rule, who knows? But anyway, keeping it in the air is the big deal.
Yeah. And it's cool for that, you know. I mean, I'm talking, this is frivolous, but it's one of these things that has, I don't know, there's a little magic in this, and if we can spread that. But yeah, I would like to see that. Hey, John, that was a great wave, but can you and Nathan get like 4,000 on a Biff Bat challenge?
Yep.
I'm sure they could.
Yep. And get the world's best surfers.
Yeah.
Or amateurs, whoever, just to be involved in this Biff Bat World Championships. You can do it all online.
Yeah.
Have an umpire. You've got to have an adjudicator. The only thing is you can come in with some massive score, but if no one's seen it, you need to have someone to go, no, that's the score they got. It's just trying to keep the ball in the air. The thing about surfing that we love is flow.
Yeah.
And yet sometimes we can't surf.
Yeah.
So we've got to have stuff that can give us the stoke of surfing.
Yeah.
That is stimulating for the mind. I think what can be challenging for a lot of surfers is if they've never had a sports background and a background in ball sports. Because ball sports, like a lovely sport that goes along surfing oftentimes is golf.
Mm.
So if there's flat days or flat spells, you know, golfing. Or
Kelly plays a lot of golf.
He does.
I don't really like golf.
Yeah, I never really got into it.
Sorry, golfers.
No, well, yeah. What was it? You didn't like?
I just get a little bit bored. But maybe this was when I was younger. Just I couldn't zone the mindful bit from it. But maybe now is the time to try. I'll stick with Biff Bat. It's more accessible. The clubs are a bit more accommodating. New members and all that stuff. Because there is that stuffy old sort of side to golf, isn't there? That from the outside looking in, it looks like a pretty boring old sort of, I'm going to get slated for this, but Kelly slated for this. But it does look a bit like, just has got that sort of vibe, really. And
that's true.
When I played in Australia many, many years ago, that was cool because it was accessible and the views were fantastic. And it was, you know, just real people having a kick knockabout. And that was good. But yeah, I just never got into it in later life. My old man plays and loves it, but not really something that I've got into. But the Biff Bat thing, yeah, it's frivolity turned into flow state. And I love it. Can just see it now.
So good, you know, dude.
Ladies and gentlemen, the next Biff Bat challenge is Ben Gravy with Kalani Rob. They're trying to beat Kelly Slater and Rob Machado's 4,000.
Yeah, man. Honestly, I swear.
Biff Bat Stoke League.
The Stoke League, I swear, it'll take off. They'll just ditch their boards. Just fuck the board. Like, they don't need it anymore. Just get the Biff and the Bat out.
Is that what's come of this show? Surfing's dead and long live Biff Bat.
Screw surfing.
Yeah.
But it's just this thing where when you're focused on something, you're free from thoughts.
Yeah, that's the serious bit.
And if you're free from thoughts, your inner child comes to life.
Yeah.
And this is this aspect of us that we love about surfing, is that you could have all kinds of stuff going on, but if you get into that surf sesh that you know we can all have, where the challenge is high enough.
Yeah.
Okay, too little challenge and it's a bit more, the mind can wander. Too much challenge and the mind can wander even more.
Yes, yeah.
But if you're right in that middle spot, you can enter this thought-free zone where it's just about paddle, 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 and yet you're not even thinking about the paddling. Then it's snap, 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 and yet you're not even thinking about the snap. Then it's on your feet, but again, you're not even thinking about being on your feet. When you actually break down the flowing surf experience, it's like Jerry Lopez talks about.
I was going to say exactly that.
Yeah, that teaches you what life is all about, which is a present moment experience.
Well, I think a couple of Sundays ago, we put Jerry, I'm sure there'll be a few Jerry Lopez quotes from us, because he is, as I said on the post, one of the mindful surfers, right? And he, this is another plug for another podcast, but the podcast that Dave Rastovich and Lauren Hill do, the Water People podcast, Jerry Lopez was on there talking, as I said, so eloquently and navigating sort of the words that he used as easily as he's done ocean, wind, snow, all of that stuff, because he's a super athlete, really, and kind of great spirit. He said, he and Dave Rastovich were talking about the fact that surfing is a backdoor into meditation. You know, that we, and that's part of this show as well, is mindfulness and meditation practice and getting into that state. But surfing is almost a sort of a secret hatch, almost a cheat to an extent, into this kind of meditative state. And anything that can do that, to sort of remove thoughts of past and future and take you into that present, is a real kind of glimmer, gateway, whatever you want to call it, into probably the power that you can achieve, calmness in mind, from trying a version of a meditation practice.
100%. The combination, we spoke about this last week, but it's always this conversation worth mentioning, just as consistently as possible as we become more open as human beings about our mental well-being. That if you can then combine a life and set of activities that bring flow. So for example, with your life being, you know, the work that you choose to do or don't do. So for example, if you have a natural skill for cooking, let's say, and the challenge is that you've got to make X amount of number of meals for let's say a restaurant you're working in, versus not having the skill set or interest, because interest is massive in flow, right? You've got to be interested in something of, let's say, a desk job doing something, let's say like accounting, where you're not necessarily even into numbers. Is that career path of the chef that might be in you would be happier regardless of income, regardless of whatever else is going on, because of this thing called flow. And this is what's fascinating about life choice, is that our life choices dictate our well-being. We know that, but we tend to, when we're in our lives, we tend to not think outside the box at times, because we get into habits and habits become themselves. And before we know it, we're just living on the treadmill, and with the hamster wheel, we're just doing the same things over and over. But you know when you've experienced flow, when your energy is up and you just feel better, but you don't even know why. And it's like you've not even thought, quote unquote, that's what this is. You've not thought about the future.
Mm.
And you've not thought about the past. Mm. And then you start to unravel this thing and you start to go, wow, well, if it's really just thinking that causes unhappiness, can I create a life in my work, but my activities as well, that puts me away from past, away from future, into this flow of now, because I'm so focused on what I'm doing, that joy becomes just the byproduct. You're not even aiming at joy. It's just a byproduct. The next bit to that is this, and it's to say then there's some great researchers on flow, and we'll recite them in the show notes. There's a guy I really want you to all check out who has this charity, I believe, called The Flow Project. And it's trying to get youngsters and adults into more flow experience in their lives because it's so good for us.
Mm.
And he talks about the duality in flow, which is also that what goes up must come down. And if you've had an amazing surf session and you've just escaped completely the vortex of like this physical world of, you know, bills and people and shit and this and that and the other, is it God, wow, and you've just been no thoughts, go, waves, floaters, cutbacks, God, I just did a cutback, hooting with your mates, and just all of that, is then when you step back on the sand or on the pebbles and you get back in the car, give yourself permission to be human, basically. Because flow isn't something that we can expect to maintain all day, every day, etc. So for me, always, it has to be the combination of a mind-to-body practice as well as a body-to-mind. So the mind-to-body practice is to have a meditation practice in your life so that when the thoughts do come back, which they will, and there's that feeling of coming down off of a high of a flow experience, that you can still calmly manage your mind. Because the thoughts will come back. When you're having, let's say, those moments of solitude and quiet, when you're just, you know, for example, watching TV in the evening and it's not bringing you flow and you're there just, let's say, overthinking a problem at work or whatever, is that you have the awareness skill being crafted by your meditation practice that helps you go, oh, I'm having these thoughts. I'm just going to pause the TV. It's not doing me any good because it's actually meaning that I can't be with my mind right now.
Yeah.
And maybe I'm with a loved one. And one of those things, I'm just going to say, look, honey, actually, can I just talk about this for a second? Because I do this thing where, in particular, the evening time is a slight trigger for me.
Yeah.
Because I possibly have stored up overthinking things during the day.
Mm.
Occasional overthoughts about finances and little overthoughts about how I'm going to run my business and injuries and, you know, wanting to go on surf trips but not being able to. I don't know, whatever it might be. And there was a time in my life where I would have used the television to try and get flow experience, thought-free, and be into that now experience.
Yeah.
And I would try to use it. But let's be perfectly honest about TV. A hell of a lot of the time, it's not going to bring that for us because it's just not that good. Unless you're watching epic show after epic show.
Yeah. I mean, I've got big things on this. I think unless you're watching the product of someone's true creativity, like an amazing film or something that is engaging. Again, it's sort of like stepping through a portal into another world completely, isn't it? And I think if you get the right music, book, show, experience... fill in what you will, then you're in that sort of zone where you are achieving some sense of, you're removing yourself from your thoughts and you're going into something else. This is a note to self as much as anything else, as often this show is social media at its worst is the worst kind of interruption of any kind of flow state and anxiety inducing. Everything from the light that the screen emits to the feelings of missing out to comparison, which we talk about a lot. And then you've got sort of TV, which is almost that kind of, if you're watching that stuff without the nuance and depth, and that's kind of is a sort of fast food for the mind. And there's always a consequence to consuming that sort of thing anyway, whether it's real or perceived. And then you've got all the other things that kind of allow almost a state of heightened anxiety under the sort of pretense almost of taking a flow state experience or calming down. So it's being aware of that and seeing which are the real moments of, that's fine. And it's like any humans, you know, we use other methods. Surfing is one. I mean, it's a sort of healthy drug, as I would describe it. But, you know, we medicate, don't we, to get a flow state in society. You know, drugs, drink, whatever you want, cigs, you know, tobacco for anybody listening. So all of that stuff is trying to recreate that back door into flow state. And unless it's authentic, it's a false promise, isn't it, that it's giving you?
So true. So true. On that note,
yeah,
let's get into some meditation. Because this is what we're talking about. The theme is, you know, surfing gives you flow. If you can get it right, this is so much what this show's about, is getting that flow, getting that stoke. And that's so much about your mindset, equipment choice, all these kinds of things. And then you've got this life outside of the ocean. And if we combine the two, management of the, of both, you can get the most stoke from your life. That's everything that we stand for. So this meditation practice we're about to do right now is to raise that awareness and help you step into the present moment and be aware of your mind. And if you're aware of your mind and aware of your thoughts, you'll be aware also that just because you've had a thought doesn't make it true. So take a deep breath in through your nose and breathe out. And breathe in. And breathe out. And take a breath in. And breathe out. And deep breath in. And breathe out. Just spend a moment now to really take in the view that you're experiencing, colors. Just see what you see. Notice the sky. You can see the sky. Notice the trees, if you can see trees. Whatever you can see. Just keep your gaze on the colors. No matter how mundane or uninteresting those colors are, just see them for what they are. And now just go back to the breath. And the thing about the breath is I want you to practice a relaxation exercise. And it's just to, when you breathe out, is really tune in to your body. And as you're breathing out, just relax your muscle fibers. It's a conscious decision. Like it might be your neck, your chin, your tummy might be like holding unconsciously. No matter what's been going on in your life, we all have little things we're holding on to for control and things. So just take a deep breath in. And then as you breathe out, just let that air come out. And then as you breathe out, just let your body really relax into the seat you're in or where you're standing. Take another deep breath in. And again, as you breathe out, just let all your muscles unwind. Well done, guys. That's great. How did you find that one? The tuning into your body. Can you notice your body like that?
It's something I do with another kind of somebody that I'm working with. It started working when I sort of went to look at alternatives to having back surgery for my, you know, I think as I've mentioned early on in the show, I've got a few bits that have either fallen off or falling off or whatever it is through combination of age and doing stupid things when I was younger. And my back is the one, you know, so the fracture in that lower L4, L5 region, really, by the time I knew about it, there's a lot of damage had been done, you know, so degenerative discs, arthritic facet joints, the pars kind of bits, wings on the vertebra snapped off. So, you know, when you're young, you sort of get through some of that stuff. And then later life, it just kind of comes back in a form of like sciatic pain and all that sort of stuff. I went to see a really good surgeon, and he, as most surgeons are, you know, that's their thing. They're interventionists. They're gung-ho, you know, that you work with a lot of really good athletes and sort of pros and rugby players and so on. And first line was that you have an injection to like a cortisone injection to create kind of nerve block almost, which blocks the nerve. It's almost a sort of diagnostic as well then. So you can say, okay, if that works, then we know where the impingement is. And you could see the kind of crushed nerve root anyway. And I started doing a little bit more research about, you know, kind of physio and sports therapy and exercise and actually looking back at what else can I do as a sentient being and one with a body and choice to start moving and exercising and strengthening that even through some of the pain. So, you know, you get to a level where structural injury injury does need intervention at times, and otherwise that sort of industry wouldn't exist. But I really wanted to have that as a last resort. And even, to be fair, in consultation with this guy, was saying the same sort of things. So I found somebody who worked with a full sports physio first, and that was really good, just in terms of movement patterns and what to do when it's hurting. I'd prior to that done Pilates when it first happened to try and re-strengthen it, but then you get out, you know, you make the gains, you get lazy, you know the pattern. So that happened. And then working with someone who was much more in tune with kind of body movement, holistic therapies as a sports practitioner, you know, kind of holistic massage as well. And part of her techniques was also involved meditation to take that relaxation of muscle and body. So it was a really nice balance between, you know, hands-on, where is the issue structurally and what else can we do about it? And working on different points, you know, so... Yes, because of the imbalances that are created by those injuries, you might need to work ankles as well to kind of recorrect all the way up the chain of connection. But yeah, the meditation bit, to circle back to your point on that, and that's why I make it, really helped as part of that process. And touch wood, you know, kept me off the operating table, which is something I was keen to do for as long as I can. It helps to then, you know, keep exercising, strengthen, get the diet, keep the mind-body stoke alive, what we talk about. It really is, I think, in that creating awareness through meditation, breathing, relaxation, in where those things are happening in your body, that you become very aware of where those bits need addressing and fixing. And
it's really cool.
Yeah, that's been a really cool part of it. And as we were talking about on the show last week, in some of these practices, if I'd have gone back and told my 19-year-old self about them, it would have been incredibly skeptical. But, you know, the pain is never gone. Although there are periods when I'm, you know, actually exercise removes it completely. But the morning sort of niggles that come from having an arthritic condition in there as well, they're always going to be there. But the management of that and the awareness of it and the breath work and the meditation and combined with strength training and movement is just, I can't recommend it highly enough. I would absolutely keep going at that. Or if you haven't tried it, just give it a whirl.
It's really cool, dude. It's interesting. People don't necessarily associate things like mind work.
Yeah.
With healing the body.
Mm.
But of course, if someone gets mentally really stressed about an injury, then that's causing a physiological response.
Yeah.
So there's this link between the mind and the body over and over. And this has only really begun, the research that's going into this area. And so people talk about placebo.
Yeah.
And they say, oh, it's just placebo. Well, placebo is, that is what it is.
If it works.
You can't capture what it is because, of course, the mind is... invisible.
Mm.
And this invisibleness is this kind of nothingness of, let's say, consciousness in the universe.
Mm-hmm.
How can you measure that?
Mm.
How can you, you know, figure out how many grams of that is or whatever?
Yeah.
You can't. So people are inevitably very, very skeptical about it. If you can't be weighed or measured, then let's not do it. But of course, you're missing out on half the picture. So if you're just doing the physical work to heal an injury, let's use that as an example. Yeah. And you're not doing the mind work. Well, you're missing half the story, half the picture.
Yeah,
it's one of those ones where I remember with my knee, and this is I want to mention a quote, and it's the teacher arrives when the student's ready. When I was younger, I was very skeptical to energy healing, which is kind of what we're erring to here.
That's where we're going. Yeah,
very skeptical to it, and we might call this things like Reiki, meditative practice, anything that is using the mind to engineer a healing result.
Yeah,
and this year. With my knee that happened earlier in the year, I had a serious knee issues going on. Yes, I adjusted the diet. Yes, I adjusted the exercises that I was doing for it and how I managed it. But what I did this time round was bring in the mind work. And so what I was doing was visualizing my knee reducing in inflammation. So I would picture it as a block of ice. Now, there's a number of visualizations you can do for healing. But my visualization that I came up with, having researched and read Joe Dispenza, a lot. He's a guy that I really want you to check out. When it comes to energy healing, he's phenomenal.
Yeah.
And what I was visualizing each evening, this was a meditation I was doing, was I was visualizing my knee being like a big block of ice.
Mm-hmm.
And that when I was deep breathing, it was creating light around the ice, and the ice was melting.
Mm.
So the ice was the inflammation, this hard block. And then it was melting. This light of sunshine, if you will, was melting it. Now, it was really challenging too, because it was, my mind would then drift off onto like, you know, what's for dinner or what is he thinking about me? Or like, I don't know, like, you know how the mind just goes off like a fucking just crazy monkey, just off in that direction. So you have to just bring it back to that vision.
Yeah.
And it really, really worked. And the previous times when I've healed my knee before, it's been slower than that time. Now, whether there's something in that or not, I don't know. But we're never going to know, really.
It is one of those why not approaches for me.
Yeah, well said.
Rather than, no, it won't work.
Well said, man.
But that comes back to also
so true.
This idea of, you know, we talked about last week a little bit, looking stupid. Seth Godin, again, coming back into it, is almost, if we can do anything, and again, this is note to self, there's always going to be that in there. The more comfortable you can get with looking stupid. And by that, I mean what society might put on you or your friendship group or whatever it is that looks stupid.
Yep.
The more comfortable you get with that, the greater the gains, really.
Yeah.
because it does make you think, why not? You know, what's to lose? You know, whatever those treatments might be. I think it's kind of an opening of consciousness, isn't it? Or approach to things that will help.
Totally do. And people turn up at the right time in the right way, right on time. That's that thing where when you've grown in your consciousness enough to be open-minded enough to all kinds of approaches.
Yeah.
All kinds.
Yeah.
People and books and situations turn up mysteriously to be there because you're ready. You're ready to go. Hey, hope you're enjoying the show. If you connect with what we do here at The Mindful Surfer, why not share it with your friends? Or go on over to iTunes and leave us a review. Because the more ratings we have, the more likely it is Liam and I can come back week after week and keep building this community of mindful surfers. Now, let's get back to the show. Let's come on to our next segment, which is the, you know, mind, body, stoke. Liam and I talk about things we do with our minds and bodies to raise the stoke level. I want to talk about ego in my surfing and how it's maybe affecting me. I've been getting back into cricket the last couple of years, and we played a much better team the other day. And I'm very, very much in the early, real infancy stages of learning how to bat. I've had a few successes, and I've clearly got a natural gift for it, having not played much at all. And I can see it away, and I can defend the ball and hit the ball, etc. And I'm really asking loads of questions and being very inquisitive. And how can I get better at this? And how can I get better at that? And I'm really in this learning phase, and it feels wonderful.
Yeah.
It's the joy of learning, and it's entering into that next room. And I'm getting a taste of this in my cricket as to what you're getting
in surfing.
In your surfing, yeah. Right. And then I got out for a duck, which is no runs to anyone who doesn't know cricket, and to a great ball, like a really good ball that I had never faced. I'd never faced a ball this quick, this good.
You're going to have to say that now.
No, it really was. There's my ego talking. It was amazing. And then there's a fucking thing.
You should have seen the guy. He was 8 foot tall.
Literally. And actually, do you know what? Yeah, in my interpretation at the time, it felt like a really good ball. Liam was actually watching from the side, and I was like, mate, it came in at like 3 miles an hour.
By at least bloody southerners can't play cricket.
That's it.
You call that a good bowler?
Yeah, well, quite. Absolutely. But it was this thing where I replayed getting out for naught quite a few times, and it really was like, whoa, like this is really affecting my ego. Because of course, then you got to go back, play again, and you might get another naught. There's nothing to say you won't get another naught. Now, all this experience I'm having around cricket is very, very valuable, and it's very healthy because it's learning about my ego. And the more we learn about our egos and become aware of them, the more we can allow them to pass, mainly caring what other people would think of us. That being its predominant concern. And when you get out of the way of that concern, you can then feel more relaxed and explore all areas of your life as a learner.
Yeah.
As a real learner, like a passionate, passionate learner, as opposed to someone who's, let's say, succeeding or failing, because there's no such thing. There's either success or learning. There's no failure. And there's this other one, which is my buddy said, which is there's no such thing as a mistake, because a mistake is a mistake, and you wouldn't not take what the learning is.
It's a lesson.
It's a lesson. So it's never a mistake. Yeah. So my thing is, in my surfing, I think I've gotten into this pattern where I'm comfortable.
Yep.
And I'm trying the same things. And yes, it's about, you know, how high and tight can I get, and can I do that maneuver? Yep. And don't get me wrong, I'm getting loads of flow experience.
Of course.
But I'm not really putting myself in situations where I would feel anything close to how the cricket makes me feel at the moment. And whether that's the wave dependent too, like surfing is unique in the sense that you can only challenge yourself as far as the conditions dictate as well. Like, fair enough, I can go and play cricket and yeah, it's got to be dry enough to actually play. But most of the time in the summer, it's just you can play.
Yeah.
So you've got more control over the challenges that you can put into your life in other sports, maybe sometimes. Whereas in surfing, you know, I'd love to challenge myself to backdoor barrel into slabs, let's say, head and a half, double overhead, like buy a gun, get a 6'6" and try and, you know, it does make me think, you know, so yes, there's this challenge of actually the conditions being able to allow me to put, you know, to actually kind of put more challenge into my surfing. But ultimately, I can still put that in there if I want.
Yeah.
On a longboard, in particular a longboard.
Yeah.
Because we get lots of little waves and crumbly waves. And I do get in bits on the longboard, but maybe I should take that even further because I don't feel like I'm in that learning phase in my surfing.
And that's where it's good to get that experience, isn't it? Because actually, it comes back to that stupidity thing. The ego thinks, oh, I look stupid getting out for naught, falling off that wave, falling off my skateboard, falling off my bike, falling, failing, whatever you call it. And if you don't do that, you don't progress, you don't learn, you don't. Yep. We've talked about this loads in the show. If there's one thing that I could almost try and impart as well to my kids and the younger generation is don't be afraid to do things that make you look stupid in the process of learning. It's not even looking stupid. It's what you think looks stupid. It's a perceived stupidity vibe, isn't it? It's just that everybody that's got brilliant at something, I'll probably say this every show, has made those same mistakes. You know, it's like when if you get somebody to come around and build a house or fix a car or whatever, they've become expert, like anybody, at doing that thing more than you have because they've put in the energy, time and effort to learn and make mistakes in pursuit of that excellence. And that excellence is always in the future, isn't it?
Yeah.
But as long as you're continuously learning. And sometimes those things come along to remind you, don't they, that it's a bit like you kind of ego allows you to exist in a space and you think, oh, yeah, this is good now. And then somebody bigger or something bigger will always come and just give you either an actual or a metaphorical clip around the ear.
Big time.
And it's in those experiences that you can, if you embrace them, really learn, you know.
Totally. And it's really embracing the growth mindset.
Yeah, growth. That's
over the rigid, fixed one.
Yeah.
And the growth mindset says, I'm going to be okay looking stupid. And I'm going to embrace it. I'm going to lean to it. Yeah. I'm going to lean into just looking silly and falling off. And with regards to the longboard, when I have been having more flow, even on really crumbly 1 to 2 foot waves, when I've been having more flow, it's when I've been falling off more. And the reason why I'm having more flow with those falls is because I'm pushing it, because I'm testing it, looking stupid, don't care. Just go try anyway. Hang on the 5 on the nose, try and do hang 10.
Yeah.
Now try and do a cutback and hit the bowl, whatever. I mean, the conditions might not dictate that I can have loads of challenge in my surfing all the time. But if you think outside the box and really try and push, let's say your longboarding, for example, I definitely get that experience. It's about ego because my ego says, oh, no, I mustn't be the guy who's falling off because I'm a local here.
Yeah.
And that local is a good surfer. Yeah. The good surfers don't fall off. Yeah. They're always up on their feet and they always look cool and they're always really in control. Yeah. And that's fucking bollocks, listen, right?
You're right. Good surfers don't fall off, but excellent ones do.
How good is that?
Yeah.
Because, dude, I love that.
Yeah. I might put that on a t-shirt.
That's brilliant.
But it is part of that thing, right? So it's kind of where is the most joy? Let's come back to that as well, because it's a bit like, and again, note to younger self, the person stood with his arms folded, usually he actually in this instance, so sorry fellas, on the edge of a dance floor, maybe holding a pint, maybe just sat there watching other people dance and have a great time. And how often is really the reason that they're not throwing shapes to Come On Eileen or anything sort of cheesy even, or just putting it out there, is because they don't want to look stupid in front of their mates. It goes back to that peer pressure of, I don't want to look stupid. I don't dance. Why? Because you don't like it? Or because you don't get joy from it, unadulterated joy from throwing your body around to a vibration of energy and music and all that comes from. And by the way, guys and girls, I've been there before. I've done it myself and at times. And it's because you don't want to look stupid in front of certain people. But where's the fun in that? So almost in stupidity, if we call it that, or failure, sometimes is where you'll find the biggest joy.
Because so true.
As we say again, this is another theme. Once you start giving less of a shit progressively, because it's not a magic bullet, this, and not caring what people think, then you'll have a good time in life.
It's really true. And I got to think of my buddy who then said, you know, because I've gotten out and I'd had no runs and I'm like, oh, you know, this sucks, and just I'm really dealing with it there. And he's like, God, you know, what's really funny mate, is I literally do not give a shit how many runs you make.
Mm.
And I really like that about this, what we call the soul journey in sport and surfing and cricket or anything that brings you flow, whatever you do with your life. Because actually nobody cares anywhere near as much about your wave that you maybe fell off on as you do.
Oh, that's 100.
No one.
Yeah.
And yet we think they do. And the thing with surfing is, the challenge in surfing is this, is that there is so much judgment and there are people watching. And then, you know, if you do fall off, oh, I'm not going to get a wave now. You know, that thing in the lineup when it's like a peak, let's say, for example. So we can see why it happens, particularly in surfing. Such a cool sport. It's big egos.
Yeah.
There's a lot of pressure to make the wave and make the wave look like you're really in control, big spray, all these things. So you can kind of, so that you can dictate yourself in the sort of hierarchy of the lineup so that you're the one who then, quote unquote, deserves more waves and, quote unquote, deserves to be on the peak and all this kind of stuff. And all this hierarchy and all these little psychosocial events that are going on intertwining with all the other surfers and things is all just total fucking nonsense.
Because
even if you do fall off on that wave because someone let you in and then they're not going to let you in again because maybe you're not a local, for example. It's not just so what, because that can be hard to take, because then you think, oh, fuck, well, my session's now.
Yeah.
How am I going to get, because I'm on a reef break or a point break where there's such a tight takeoff.
Yeah.
No one's going to give me a look and they're going to drop in on me straight away if I'm going because I fell off.
Yeah.
What am I going to do now? Well, the thing is that there's always another wave. And Jerry Lopez talks about this a lot. And I remember seeing one of his quotes, and I don't know the exact quote, but it's like, essentially, the sets will keep rolling, and the waves will keep coming, and you'll get your opportunity.
Absolutely.
And it's not a black and white. Oh, that's it. Now I'm done.
Yeah.
I better not try and take off on anything because people all think I'm shit now. Just go again.
Yeah. Therein lies the sort of lesson in life. Because we do circle between life. I mean, and you know, there's a few people told me who are listening to this. Well, some talking about sort of some people who are friends will say, don't understand what the show's about, and good luck with it anyway, Liam. But then a few other
Will swears too much.
Yeah, that's come up a few times. But the other thing is that there are other people around the periphery of surfing, but who might, you know, that kind of intersection between surfing and mindfulness and meditation and yoga and practice about mind as well as body and spirit, that there is some metaphors and sort of synergies in what we're talking about, and you can take that away into the world that you live in. But you're right. I mean, that is kind of, it's only a moment, and something else will come along, whatever you're facing in life, as dark as it might seem, you know. And again, we've been there ourselves, you know, work, stress, pressure. There are moments even now you're facing that go, wow, this is going to be another bumpy ride. But guess what? It's just a moment. We're still here. As long as you can sort of face it again and be ready to paddle into the next wave, then life is good. The other thing I was going to talk about on that, because we also people saying, oh, how do we get into surfing? It sounds cool. Is that when we're talking about those lineups and that looking foolish, I have to remind myself sometimes that, and again, this is a kind of lesson in life in a way, is that real entry level of surfing, you know, how do I get into it, is where some of the purest joy, I've said this before, where some of the purest joy is, because all sense of ego, you're riding energy of the water for the first time, you're in the ocean, all of those negative ions, you don't mind that you're falling off because you're on the very, very start of your journey. If you look at the faces of people coming out of the water, even in British breaks, the people who are really, really having the most stoke are the people who, there's two of them, they've got a board in under each arm, they're carrying it back up, the leash is dragging along the sand. They are part of a surf school, they're riding big foamies, and they are embracing everything for me that surfing is about. It's just, how am I going to get unadulterated, flow state, pure joy out of this experience of being in the sea?
I love that, dude. It's this thing of the one wave mentality.
Mm.
First wave, one wave.
Mm.
It's treat everyone that like it's your first.
Yeah.
And like it's just one wave. Because it always is.
Yeah.
It's only ever just one wave. And when you think about how the present moment is being reborn and reborn constantly, and there's this idea in Buddhism that, you know, that we are reborn into every moment that happens and there is no such thing as the past. So you aren't your past. You're here. You're now. You're being reborn. Yeah. It's the same with surfing. And if you keep that pure stoke for just that one wave, no matter how crumbly it is, what's going on, that stoke stays alive. And I love that, dude. I love that you point that out, because you do see it. You see these people with immense pure stoke coming from their faces, and they come back to the instructor, who's that kind of slightly saltier, crustier, gnarlier surfer who's done his or her winters in Indo, and is just there in the summer doing, you know, here we are. And you see them a little bit more fatigued, surf fatigued.
Yeah.
And the way to freshen that up was always your mindset. Where is it at? Is it present?
Yeah.
Or is it elsewhere? And I love that you point that out. Dude. It's so true. You see it in people.
You see that stoke. And I think, especially as you go into that sort of those next brackets and you get a bit frustrated with waves and so on and so forth, but you kind of go, that joy is trying, how do we keep that going in our, if you like, it's our later life of whatever practice journey you're on. And you see it in kids, right? They are so unafraid of looking stupid up until a certain, they're so fresh. They have this kind of ambition and hunger for life and learning that as adults, you want to, how is it that we lose that? I mean, there's lots of books written on this, but, and it's the same, isn't it? How can we not lose the stoke? How do we not lose the joy?
100%. And there's just one quote I just want to finish on, which is by Gretchen Rubin.
Mm.
She's got a blog about happiness and has written some great books. And it's easy to be heavy and hard to be light. And if you can stay light about that surfing experience and what you're doing or not doing, you'll notice your own heaviness and how seriously we can all take it.
Yeah.
Because I'll be the first to admit that I do that. And then in being more aware, you're already letting it pass.
Yeah.
Dude, have you got anything on mind, body, soul you want to share?
I've sort of gone so around the houses as I usually do that I've brought in both at the beginning, the middle and nearly the end, most of my points I was going to make, which is what happens. So I've sort of spin off in these tangential journeys.
It's epic.
Around the theme. I mean, sort of body-wise, we come back to this because you're talking about longevity in surfing and then just dialing the gains of removing some of the processed and bred products from my diet. As people who are on this with me will know, I do love some very carb-heavy stuff, but I've kind of cleaned that bit up as well in a way, from crisps to bread. Dialing back, you might have seen an earlier post about Will's love of bulletproof coffee. But I was still on the good old cow booby milk. Although I don't drink lots of it. It's just in things like coffee. But I'm sort of switching that a little bit as well.
Mm-hmm.
And let's just see what happens, right? You know, it's kind of to try and get some of those fitness gains as we head back towards the winter, which, given that we haven't had waves for 2.5 weeks, we're really looking forward to.
Do you notice a link now between what you put in your body and how it affects your surfing? Like, in terms of, we're relating that to like body fat, because you have got leaner.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I think it's been a kind of not slow, but because it's been incremental, because we kind of start surfing more and more over the last, 2.5 years, particularly together, 2.5 years. There's been sort of back and forths with that, depending on where I've been in the world and where I've been working and all that sort of thing. But actually, this period of, you know, the great pause, as it's being called, which is in some ways, you know, being fantastic alongside all the sort of sadness around people's deaths and what's happened to the world. But just that element of just taking your foot, you know, collectively off the gas and then embracing the opportunities that it's given us, you know, outside of the kind of strict lockdown period to surf more, train more, eat more, not sat either on train, plane, cab, desk or anything like that. So you can start to actually see some of the gains, because it's a more structured thing and it's regular and it's relentless rather than just being day a week, weekends, that sort of thing. So yeah, and then kind of combining that with nutrition has been so good so far, but it's sort of early. It's still early stages, because you know me, I've sort of always been the realist of, well, I love that bit there and I like that and that's balance in my life. But I am trying to sort of get a little bit more dialed on nutrition. Had a good diet, but there were some things that remained in there that just needed a little tweak and experimentation. I mean, you're a great big body hacker. And so just trying some of those things, you know, and whether listening and pulling things from friends, nutritionist friends, yourself, listening to kind of people like Ben Greenfield and just being curious about it and seeing what's out there, but only in the pursuit of longevity of surfing, really.
Yeah.
Or exercise, you know, whatever.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. And you're bringing it back to that surf.
Yeah.
Why, you know, why am I doing this? To help my surfing. Yeah. Surfing's an interesting sport in how it can be hard to create a tangible, is this helping my surfing?
Yeah.
Because we don't know how it looks.
Mm.
Certainly we get a vibe on how many waves we've caught.
Yeah.
But overall, it's how it feels.
It's how it feels.
And it's a really interesting
paradigm
that. And if you're aware enough, in tune enough of your own body, of how it feels, you'll notice evidently when you, if you make a change.
Mm.
To your diet and how it affects your surfing or your training or your lifestyle in general?
Well, it absolutely does. I mean, there's no question that, and for anybody looking to dial their experience via nutrition, training or whatever it is, the gains in terms of paddle fitness, stamina, repetition,
wave count,
it's almost not comparable to where we were when I kind of came back into the sort of surfing world after, you know, what I didn't think was an absence. But once you sort of really honest with yourself, you know, I pretty much haven't surfed really, inverted commas, properly for about 15 years, you know. So you've got to start back at the beginning. And the nutritional kind of tweaks, changes and hacks have absolutely paid off in that respect, because otherwise I wouldn't keep up with a great big lad like Will. Although I definitely wouldn't get bowled out for a duck.
Well, here he goes. Here he goes. He reckons he's nice. He puts on this front. It's a load of fucking bollocks is what it is. Truth be known, he's a
beep. Ooh, beep.
I just want to share something on. So Koa Rothman, who has the blog This Is Living, he drinks Bulletproof Coffee.
Mm-hmm.
As do I. Now, Bulletproof Coffee, if you want to check that out, go to Dave Asprey. Dave Asprey, Bulletproof Executive. And he's a body hacker, biohacker, and essentially has brought a hell of a lot of people on board this idea that if you mix butter, coconut oil, basically fats, healthy fats, saturated fats, which is a whole other conversation as to why saturated fats are actually now considered healthy, the natural fats to your coffee or caffeine beverage, you titrate and slow down the caffeine release. Mm. And so you don't get this peak. You get a much slower entry point of caffeine going into your bloodstream, because obviously the body's having to digest the fat as well as the caffeine. And that can give you a much more sustained energy. Not only that, but your body and brain therefore feeds off of ketones,
mm-hmm.
which is using fat for energy.
Yeah.
If you mix the fat for energy plus the caffeine, which is that spike in alertness and focus and energy, combine the two together, it can be a phenomenal kind of surfing ingredient in terms of lifestyle. So you can then have a Bulletproof Coffee, go in and go surfing and surf for hours with really good energy, and then even not have to eat straight away your lunch, let's say. And you can go through the day on living on this fat source. This myth of you need to keep topping up glycogen and carbohydrate with bananas and rice and all these things is a big, big myth. There's still loads and loads of wisdom in having carbohydrates as a surfer, because it's your fuel. And clearly if that fuel gets depleted enough, then you get exhausted and tired. And I find for me personally, if I go anything more than 2 or 3 days without any carbohydrate, I start to really fatigue. Yeah. I do. I drain those stores, and that's when my body's telling me to feed it back up. And so it's always this thing, whether it's doing Bulletproof Coffees and fasting more and still surfing loads, or whether it's living a much more mainstream lifestyle in that way of let's say oats in the morning with a milky coffee and lower fats, and then some sandwiches at lunch, and you know, let's say that's your surfing day, no matter what you're doing with your surf lifestyle nutrition, let's call it that, just know that if you're not getting the result that you want out of your surfing in terms of wave count, energy in the ocean, focus, feelings of stoke and positivity, if you're not getting it out of your surfing, there's always something that you can do. There's always an adjustment, and it can give you a positive result very, very fast. And it's why there's no one diet and there's no one way of eating. There's no one lifestyle in that way that suits everybody. And this is why it's vital, vital, vital that we are the kind of show that talks about mindfulness of body, food, what you choose to do, because it's so, so, so broad and so individual. And it's essential that we don't judge other people about how they eat. And also, the second bit to that is that we don't remain inside that box of, no, I'm rigid. This is how it is. And this is how it's always going to be. Because not only is the judgment just ego and separation and feelings of separation and feelings of stress even, because ultimately love is the only thing that really matters. And actually all that exists really, when you boil it down beyond the ego, we're all the same.
Yep.
This one mind, one body.
Yep.
But then also secondly, there is the opportunity for all of us to be able to feel better than we could ever have imagined feeling before, which is really quite amazing to think.
And it's out there, isn't it, for everybody to try. And you can be skeptical about it and try it and see what happens. It's thriving rather than surviving, isn't it? That's one of the themes. But with the non-judgment, there's joy to be had in doing things that are right for you at the time that it's right for you.
Completely. And then it can change.
Yeah. Like we're talking about with surf. So the mind-body-stoke element where, you know, we're always learning. We talk a lot about with regards to the craft of sports or pursuits that we find enjoyable. So too, you're learning about nutrition, the body, the impacts of certain foods, where the foods come from, what the environmental impact are of growing and delivering those foods to your door. All of that stuff. Why not also learn about that too?
Totally. Dude, what a lovely way to round off the show.
Yeah.
Thanks for having us.
And we'll see you next week.
Yeah, 100%. You.